This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world.
Welcome to Dreamland, and happy Thanksgiving, those of you who are in the United States or in any place where Thanksgiving is being celebrated, and all goodwill to everyone else as well. My new book, Transformation 2025, is in the works. I am hoping to get it out on the 15th of December, at least in Kindle. Shortly thereafter, it'll be in hardcover, softcover, and audiobook. Why should you read it? Well, that has a lot to do with what else I'm going to be talking about, because the book has been carefully timed. It is coming out just after Age of Disclosure, and at a time when a lot of people are beginning to realize that, yes, they are here. And the next step is, and a lot of us aren't there yet, is that, yes, a lot of people have experienced life with them. Back in the 1980s, my son and my wife, Anne, and I experienced life with them on a pretty much daily basis for about 2.5 years. There are two books about this, Transformation and Breakthrough. They are the only books ever written about what life with the Grays on a daily basis is actually like. They are accurate and truthful. And what I've done is I have updated these books so that not only do we have the narrative from the past, we also have updated material that's as recent as like right now about what they are, what we have learned about them, what we have learned about our brains and our minds and how we see them. So you can read these books, the new versions, Transformation 2025 and soon Breakthrough 2025, or probably be Breakthrough 2026. Anyway, you can read them and get an idea of what it might be like in your life and your family's life. And I'm not saying, oh, it's going to be horrible at all. It wasn't horrible. It was quite fascinating and quite wonderful. Among the totally new things are a discovery I made just a few months ago. My son had a close encounter experience, an abduction, in fact. He was not badly treated. And the morning after, he wrote at the age of 8 a little couple of paragraphs of what had happened to him. The only document like this that exists in this world. It's remarkable. It's beautiful. It's mysterious. And in Transformation 2025, I quote it and discuss it. There are many other things as well. I talk about something that has dogged me for years, which is something Bud Hopkins did to me. I was confused about something that happened at the University of Texas in 1963, an awful event. The first really mass shooting, not the first, but certainly one of the early ones, the Whitman Massacre, where this crazy man went up on top of the University of Texas Tower and just started shooting students. I was very humiliated by what I did. I was a young boy, and what happened was very simple. I was walking onto the mall, the West Mall at the University of Texas, when suddenly I saw what looked to me like a little boy get shot in the head from behind, which would have been from the tower. He pitched forward on his bicycle, and then I saw other people going down, and I turned and I ran. And I jumped in my car. I had come up for the 100th anniversary celebration of something called Schultz's Beer Garden, which is still there. It's a famous student watering hole at UT. I went all the way back to my grandmother's house. And because I said that I had been there and that I hadn't been there, Bud seized on it to show that I was unstable and a liar. That was his idea, because he was in the throes of trying to discredit me in any way possible at the time. And that is still haunting me after all these years. The boy's name was Alec Hernandez. I do not know what happened to him. I have no idea. But he wasn't shot in the head like I thought. He was shot in the calf and pitched forward because he was, feeling the pain of the injury to his calf. I ran because I was a young 20-year-old boy or 19-year-old boy and scared to death. I felt ashamed because I hadn't tried to help anybody. But later I found out that those who tried to help people were killed. He shot people so that they would scream but not die. And when people ran out to help them, he killed them. I'm here because I was afraid. I was so ashamed of myself. But I did nothing wrong. The only wrong thing was the way Bud mischaracterized it to make me look like something I'm not. So that's there. And I get into a number of other things. A lot of stuff was done to me, but I'm not going to talk about that anymore. What I'm going to talk about with regard to the book is the wonderful trajectory from the fear and the terror and the confusion of the first incident, the abduction in 1985, the first thing I really noticed, although I'm pretty sure they were hammering on my door, in effect, from the previous summer. And certainly in October, as Jacques Sandalescu and Andy Gottlieb could attest, and Andy Gottlieb still with us, still vividly remembers. So, after the abduction in 1985, I was, of course, horrified. I was terrified and confused, and when I finally figured out it was a real event, I was even more scared. But I went out in the woods anyway, because I was also extraordinarily curious. What in the world were these people? Well, now I know them pretty well. They've been in my life a long time. It hasn't been pretty, but it has been extremely productive. I would be much less of a human being if it wasn't for my relationship with them. Much less. I would not have the love in me. I would not have the spiritual knowledge in me. I probably would never have known or understood how to reconnect with my wife after she died, which is the great treasure of my life at this point. I would never have known for certain, as I do, from personal, physical experience, that we do not die. I would never have known any of those things if it hadn't been for the Grays in my life. They're not easy. In fact, they're not only not easy, they're really hard to be with. They're cantankerous, among other things. But if you ask me, do they have your best interests at heart, Whitley? I would say, I think so. And even if they don't, I do, and I am benefiting from the relationship. Now, it definitely has a dark side. If you want to get into that, read my book, A New World. It'll take you into some of the darker spaces, for sure. And we're going to have to deal with that. There's some evidence, and it may happen, it could happen tomorrow, could have already have happened before this is published in a few days, that the president may say, yes, there are aliens among us. There's a story rumoring this on TMZ, and the Day of Disclosure documentaries has perhaps created the impression that this might happen. And it might. It might. And I think if it does happen, it's going to change things, but slowly. A lot of the scientific community is not going to listen. They will still laugh at it, even though the president says that it's real, even though, because it's going to take time. You know, you ask yourself, why do so many intellectuals and scientific scientists and academics debunk this and deny it. If you look at a magazine or a newspaper like The Guardian, which is where a lot of intellectuals and scientists and so forth go for a general newspaper, you'll see the day of disclosure, the comments on it are all very disparaging and snide, mostly. Why is it like that? Well, the reason is this. It's something called ontological shock, which I've mentioned many times. The discovery that the world that you believed was real is not real. That is that shock. And they are in the process of discovering that, and the closer it comes to being undeniable, the more shrill their denials will become. Believe me, I've been there and done that. I've seen it and done it myself. I've been in ontological shock, so I know it from the inside out. So why are they in it? Well, they're in it for a number of reasons. The first one, I think, is a bit of an ego reason. They are the top of the intellectual food chain. So no, the Grays, the visitors aren't coming to them. They're coming to people like me and you, the experiencers. Most of us very far from the top of the intellectual food chain. Like, I'm probably the most articulate writer on this subject in history, but I cannot speak at groups like the Soul Foundation, which I was just at their conference in Italy, because I don't have an academic credential. I can't speak even at the Authors of Impossible conference at Rice University, which is run by Jeff Kripal, my friend, because I don't have a credential. I spoke at the first conference, and that was it. I was never invited back to speak again. And admittedly, he has a lot of people lined up to speak and not many chances to do his conference. But I wonder if I would ever be invited back. I don't know. Because they are trying to extend this whole idea into the larger scientific community. And they're not going to be able to do that successfully if they have a close encounter witness with no credentials whatsoever standing up and speaking, no matter how articulate they are. And I love the people involved. I love Jeff. I love Gary Nolan. They're both dear friends. And I understand their position. But on a larger scale, the society has got to change that. The society has got to open the door to us. It has to open the door to communion and the long list of books that follow it, because those books are an antidote to ontological shock from beginning to end. If the intellectuals and the scientists would look at them seriously, they would come away empowered. They would know that there are ways for us to get into this relationship with the Grays, to do it right, and to make it count for the human species. We have to do this. We do have to do it. Now, will the president really make a statement, as been hinted in TMZ, for example, about this, saying that there are aliens here? And if so, how much of a difference would it make? Some difference, certainly. It would choke back a lot of the derisive laughter. But he's not a popular president and not very well respected. So the laughter will certainly continue. And a lot of people in the sciences and the intellectual community will say, well, more proof that he's gone around the bend. But a lot of people are not going to think that. A lot of people are going to think that no matter how popular or unpopular he is the president of the United States, and he's making a world-changing comment. And we'll just have to see where that falls out. Now I'd like to talk a little bit, if I may, about Three-Eye Atlas. I've been following Avi Loeb, and you can follow him yourself on Medium. And I recommend strongly that you follow him on Medium rather than listening to all of the stuff that's going on the internet about him, including the AI-generated fake comments, some of which seem extremely believable. And what he's actually saying is that this is an unusual object with a lot of unusual features, and it should be looked at carefully. NASA, never a straight answer, is all clammed up and sending out only blurry pictures, which only make the situation worse, and repudiating what he says, even though he didn't say what they say he said. More of the same. When will they ever wake up? NASA is an extraordinary organization with a phenomenal history and has been a phenomenal part of science and exploration for years. But when it comes to this subject, it just doesn't get it. Way back when, one of the chief engineers at NASA, one of the founders, actually, of NASA, had a series of extraordinary UFO experiences and wrote a book about it. He wrote a book about it. NASA would not let him publish the book while he was in service, so he assumed he would publish it afterwards. His daughter found it in his effects as a manuscript after he died, because they wouldn't even agree to let him publish it when he was retired. It's extraordinary. Can you imagine that? The book was published and it made a certain stir back in the 60s when it was published. I've interviewed his daughter, and I believe I've interviewed the man who did the publication on Dreamland years ago, but I could not interview him because he was dead already. So NASA has been stifling this for years. Why? Is it because they're under the thumb of the Defense Department? Probably, but it's not sane. Do you understand that? All of this secrecy surrounding this subject is not sane. It's insanity, a form of insanity based on fear, an irrational reaction to fear. I think it might go way back to something that Art Exon told me years ago, or hinted at. He wasn't like a philosopher, Art, at all. General Exon was a general, and you knew that as soon as you started to talk to him. He was not a philosopher. I mean, there have been philosopher generals, obviously. Art was not one of them. But he was a very smart man. And he suggested that there had been a concern in the scientific group that was working on this subject, that if these entities had a different view of reality, it might be that if we acknowledged their presence, their view of reality would overwhelm ours because it was intrinsically more true and more strong. And we would be kind of plunged into a state of non-meaning. Well, I have some experience with that. And I've guessed that that might have been something that a very great scientist, John von Neumann, who was certainly involved in this in the past, and even though his family says otherwise, it's not true, he was. He was an expert in quantum mechanics and had a very, for that era especially, a very sophisticated understanding of the flexibility and malleability of the real world. So it probably, if that happened, the warning probably came from him. That warning would be expressed to presidents like this. If you say they are here, that is going to convince enough people that this is real, that they will be able to come pouring through into our reality, and we will never be able to close that door, because it will be in our own minds, and it may be a door we are desperately in need of closing and can't. Now, what president is going to say, oh, I don't care about that, I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway? The answer is none. They will not, ever. So whether or not Trump is going to say it, I don't know. And if he does say it, will that happen? I actually don't think so, because I think it would have happened to me already and other people like me. Now, J. Christopher King is a perfect example, or Chris Bledsoe is another example. They would be really weird if that had happened to them, and they're not. They're straightforward people, and so am I to best I can be. My world looks just the same as your view of it, I'm pretty sure. So I don't think it'll happen. But if it did happen, of course, it would ruin everything for us. So it's a risk that they don't know whether or not they dare take. You put that on a president's desk, and he's going to say, give this to someone else. I don't even want to touch it. I was with one of the greats, maybe the lady on the cover of Communion, but one of them that looked like that once in Texas back in the 90s when we lost the cabin and moved to a little condo in San Antonio. She showed up. I think it was probably because she recognized that it would be the last time we would be able to be together, because I was now living in an urban environment, and the time of being able to do this privately, which she insisted on, was over. And they've since evolved all kinds of clever ways of reconnecting with me. But I've never seen her again. This is the last visit. So what happened was she showed up at the condo. And at first, when I heard her, I heard her sound, a sort of a choked sound. It's quite scary unless you know what it is. And you realize it's what someone who is really scary sounds like when they say hello and can't actually talk. Sort of sound. It'll scare the dickens out of you. Anyway, I rushed out into the living room, and I saw three or four dark blue beings sitting on the floor. And I sat down in front of them, face to face, and I asked them about their history. They continued to look at me with not a very pleasant expression on their face. I think it would be even more frightening if they smiled, but they don't. So anyway, and I thought, I said to them, the way I see you, I think you have as much of a history or more of a history than we do, but those faces would not reveal anything. Then she showed up, and everything in the room changed. There were things I could see moving around on the walls that I had not seen before. And we went out together and walked the streets, the night streets, a little bit, quietly. She was very quiet. I think of us as lovers, and those of you who have read Supernatural know why. I don't like to talk about it. I'm a very private person, but I had intimate experiences with her and knew about them. She didn't consider it disloyalty, and neither did I. We had a quiet walk together, and we suddenly ended up under some pecan trees about a mile and a half from the condo so quickly that I still have no idea how we moved, and I'm not even going to get into it because I can't explain it and I don't know how to theorize about it. But she wanted to pick pecans, so we did. And the world was subtly different from this world when I was with her. I saw things that were different. I saw things moving around that were different. There was a lot that was different. It was as if I only see with my eyes part of reality. But when I was close to her, I saw much more. And I have a feeling that if I'd spent a lot of time with her, I would see really much more. I think they see souls first and bodies second, for example. I can't attest to that for sure. I've never experienced it myself, but it's a strong suspicion. Oh, and that's another reason the scientific community has trouble with this. Because the grays only care incidentally about the body. They want the bodies to survive. They call us the bodies, or the containers, by the way, to survive, because otherwise the souls won't grow. And they're here for that, for the souls, not to eat them, but to manage them. They are farmers of the soul, and very good ones. If a soul comes out weaker, then they recycle it. If a soul comes out strong, then they let it rise. They let it free. They've always been doing this. This is what they do. So the problem with the scientific community is they don't believe the bodies, there's anything here but the bodies. This world, as we now understand it, is all they think exists. They do not think that there are any frequencies, there are any energies, anything that is conscious that is outside of this, and that is wrong. It's wrong. In 1850, if you had tried to explain radio to someone, they would think you were some kind of a nut, or a wizard or a witch or something. They would not understand what you were talking about. Sending the voice thousands of miles across the ether without any, even a second's delay? Impossible. No one could shout that loud. Well, right now, the scientific community is in the position of those people, or of J.B.S. Haldane, who opined in 1898 that heavier-than-air flight was impossible. He wrote a paper proving it. 8 years later, the Wright brothers flew. So, I guess I'm going to end now. I've been in with you for 30 minutes. I love you so much, and I do hope you spread this around. Let the show go. Let it get out to people, because we experiencers have a very important contribution to make to the human future. Help us make it. When I see my friend, Ross Coulthart's huge show, or some of the great podcasts, Area 52 or such podcasts with hundreds of thousands of viewers and listeners, I think, why do I have so few? And I have so few in part because Google makes sure that I am what is called shadow banned, I think, and so do my social media people, because we just get nowhere. Part of it has to do with the spreading of stories like the story about the University of Texas. He's a liar. He's et cetera and so forth. People want to believe this is not true. They are in ontological shock. They have an enormous amount of trouble with this, but not you, or you wouldn't be listening. So take it on yourself to let the world know the truth. They are here. So are we. And guess what? I am sure we can do this. It's going to be hard. And there are going to be some very scary moments. You may be sure. And a lot of confusion. But in the end, when all is said and done, I think, just like I am still here after all these years with the graves, we will still be here, and we will be ready to take flight, just as I and so many close encounter witnesses, probably some of you, have already done. Happy Thanksgiving.
Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.